So when I was in seminary, one of the day-to-day parts of life was going to our chapel service. Every day, at the same time, there was no classes scheduled because you were expected to go to chapel. And if I'm going to be perfectly honest, the experience of going to chapel every day during seminary sounds like it would be this marvelous holy experience. But the simple fact of the matter is, chapel services were always led by students. And as we were all seminary students and we were all learning the craft of being pastors, you spent a lot of time critiquing each other. You spent a lot of time worrying about whether or not you were going to do a good job when it was your turn to lead. And then you spent a lot of time looking at the job other people did and saying to yourself, well, I don't think I'd have done that prayer exactly that way. Or, ooh, that sermon didn't make a lot of sense. I think I'd have said it this way. Or, ooh, I really wish we'd have done this song or that song. And I wish I'd gotten more out of that experience as a student. I wish I'd focused more on the experience of it as a worshiper and less of it as a pastor in training, thinking to myself, what's the best way to do this? And I wish it had been more like when I was in college. When I was at Marshall University, my wife and I were part of a Presbyterian campus ministry. It used to be called Presbyterians Reaching Out with Love, or PROWL. I don't know why they thought that was a good anagram to go with. But at some point they realized that they were very outnumbered. There weren't that many Presbyterians in the group. So they changed it to People Reaching Out with Love, because most of us in the group were non-Presbyterians. But we would have these wonderful worship services where after our weekly meeting, we would get everybody together in the sanctuary, and it was also student-led. But it was an entirely different feel. We were all there as absolute rank amateurs who had no idea what we were doing. And so we made up the services as our little college brains said they ought to go. And sometimes we sang, and sometimes we talked, and sometimes there were little plays. And we always got together at the end, and we would have a word of prayer. And the thing that was fascinating about it was it always took a long time to get done. Because there was always a big group prayer that we'd have at the end, and we'd all stand around and hold hands, and sometimes we would just almost completely circle the sanctuary, because we were all holding hands as we prayed. And some of us were inclined to pray unnecessarily long prayers. And I'm thinking mostly about myself, because I had a reputation for being the guy that always managed to drag it out just a little bit longer. But I always had something extra I had to say to God. And, you know, there's always an also, you know. But I remember some of those sanctuary services lasting well into the later hours of the evening, even into the night, because we were just there and having fun. And then we would always go over to a young lady's house to play euchre and hearts. And a marvelous young lady. I liked her enormously. I married her, so it worked out really well for everybody. And that was my Tuesday, every Tuesday. It was a marvelous experience. I don't know if you've been following along in the news lately, but Asbury University in Wilmore, Kentucky, had a worship service a couple of weeks ago. It was a chapel service, normal chapel service on this Methodist campus that was just part of the day-to-day lives of the students. Only when they came to the end of the service, it was sort of like everybody was waiting for God to do an encore, because nobody left. And the kids sat around and they talked, and they shared their faith stories, and they held hands in a great big circle, and they prayed, very much like I used to do when I was in college. The difference was they didn't go home. In fact, what we're told is that instead of going home, they just sat back down in the pews and decided they were going to sing a couple more worship songs, because that was a lot of fun, let's do that again. And then somebody picked up a guitar, and then somebody decided they were going to give a testimony. And then somebody decided to sing another song. And then somebody decided that they were going to give make a confession of something that was really weighing their hearts down. We're told that they have been doing that now for the last 14 days without stopping. They've not gone home. They've not left the sanctuary. And of course, obviously, they've gone out to eat and drink and sleep. But what we know is that there's been a continual circulation of people into that chapel at Asbury University, to the point that they began seeing enormous lines out the door, waiting for people to have space to come in and take their place in the sanctuary and worship with everyone else, to the point that they've overflowed to four other buildings. That's kind of an amazing concept, isn't it? The university being a university, this last weekend has said to the students, look, we love what you're doing, but we can't lose sight of the fact that you're college students and it's midterms. And so what they've done is they've said, we're going to schedule times now when you can be in the sanctuary. Only a few hours here, a couple of hours there. We're going to post a schedule for it. I have thoughts about this. First of all, they've begun calling it the Asbury Revival. It's interesting. There's a seminary there on the campus of Asbury University's Asbury Seminary. And the president of the seminary, and I read this article and I thought, at first he was just being kind of a fuddy-duddy, but then I realized he kind of had a point. The president of the seminary has asked that people not call it the Asbury Revival, because in his opinion, it's not yet a revival. He says it's better to call it the Asbury Awakening. When I read that, I thought, oh, well, that's a theologian for you. He's got to have the clearly defined terms, and you know, I'm sure there's some logic behind it. So I read the article. His point was, it's all good and fine for people to have a mountaintop experience with God where their very beings are just in the very glorious presence of God and they have this marvelous moment. He says that's an awakening. He says if it's to be a revival, we're going to have to wait and see what comes out of it. How will lives be changed? Will this change the overall ministry of the campus? Will this change the overall ministry of the Methodist Church? Will this change the overall ministry of Christianity around America and around the world? He says, before we can really call it a revival, we have to see how people's lives are transformed. We have to see how things have been changed. And I got to thinking, that's probably a pretty good point. Because we all want that marvelous experience with God where we just see his face. So clearly we have that really, really great, uplifting experience. And I've had them before. They're wonderful. The question is, can you stay there? And in today's gospel lesson, that's what the disciples that were with Jesus wanted to do. As they're on this mountaintop and they see Christ in his glory and they have this wonderful experience with God. By the way, the official word for when you have that wonderful experience with God, when you see his face and you feel that joy, that's called transcendence. You have a transcendent experience. And they're having this transcendent experience. They're like, they come to Jesus and they say, Jesus, it is good that we are here. Let's build some places where we can just settle up here on the mountaintop. I'll build a house for you. I'll build a house for Moses. I'll build a house for Elijah. And we'll just stay up here on the mountaintop. And as though trying to break the mood, God the Father speaks down from a bright cloud and says, this is my son, my beloved, in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to what he tells you. They are terrified because when we seek out transcendence, we seek out to see the face of God because there is great joy in that, but there is also fear in knowing that we are in the presence of the Almighty because we are not Almighty. When that fear and that moment passed, the cloud was gone, the prophets were gone, and Jesus was just Jesus again. And he says to them, let us go down into the valley. Because it's time to see if the awakening is more than an awakening. It's time to see if you have caught the spirit of revival. It's time to see how you walk when things get hard. It's time to see how your faith informs your life. As we come upon the season of Lent, it is worth noting that it is not an invitation to the mountaintop. Lent is not an invitation to glory and joy, shining bright. Lent is Jesus saying to the disciples, let us go down into the valley. Lent is an invitation to the valley. And as humans, it's not in our inclination to leave the mountaintop, because it's a great place to be. Any more than those students want to leave that worship space. By the way, it's no longer just students. People are literally bussing in from all around the country, and they have international visitors who have showed up to the point that the university has had to install the rule that preferential seating is given to college students, because even the students at Asbury are having to wait in line with busloads of people around the country who want to go and stand on that mountaintop with them. Because as humans, our response is, give us the fun stuff. Give us the glorious stuff. Give us the bright, shiny stuff. Give us the holiday. And it's not that we don't need that, because sometimes that is exactly what we need to awaken us to God's presence. But once we've been awakened to God's presence, the invitation is to go into the valley. And the valley is a difficult place to go, because Jesus' ministry in the gospel, if you've read, he's no longer going to be ministering in the Galilean region where everybody loved him. He's going to go and he's going to be ministering in Jerusalem, where he will face Romans who hate him, Pharisees who fear him, Sadducees who plot against him. He will be at every turn opposed. The invitation to go down into the valley is an invitation to struggle. The invitation of Lent is an invitation to embrace struggle. There's a wonderful military term that if you want to fully experience and appreciate the difficulty of training, especially during basic training, they say embrace the suck. That means instead of saying, oh, woe is me, I'm so miserable, tired, I'm having to run another 10 miles with a pack on my back, you have to embrace it and say, oh, yay me, I get to run another 10 miles with a pack on my back. You may not be thinking of it as something you want to do until you say, I'm doing this for a reason. This is something I'm doing to accomplish something of value. If you can find the joy in the outcome, then you can embrace the suck. You can say, yay, this is awful. I'm loving it. Let's have some more. That's Lent. Lent is that time when we challenge ourselves spiritually. We challenge ourselves physically. We challenge our willpower. And we challenge ourselves by finding ways to make life hard. As you sung the Alleluia today, the introduction to the gospel, did any of you think to yourselves, I won't sing this again until Easter? Because you won't. Because we put the alleluias away. Because we embrace that time in the valley. Why do we embrace the time in the valley? I mean, I know why soldiers do it. They train their bodies so that they are ready to face whatever comes their way. They train their minds so that they are prepared and disciplined. They train their reflexes so as they do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. Why do we do the season of Lent? So that we know that we have a God that we can turn to when time is difficult. We don't give up things in order to prove to God that we're strong enough to give it up. We give things up so that we can prove to ourselves that we're not strong enough without God to give it up. We give things up over the season of Lent because then we are encouraged to rely on our faith, to rely on our prayer life, to rely on the strength that comes from God that we ourselves don't have. Historically, during the season of Lent, I've given things up that I enjoy, like caffeine and fast food. My doctor kind of took that choice out of my hands over the last year. I can't drink caffeine, and fast food has too much sodium for my low-sodium diet. I've already given all this stuff up. So I'm having to think, what am I giving up this year to challenge myself more than my doctor already has? But you know what? People have said to me, has it been hard? No. Because I've trained for this. I've trained not to discover how tough I am or how capable I am, but I've trained to discover how good it is to rely on God's strength when I am not strong enough. That's what Lent is. Going down into the valley, following Jesus' instruction, in order that we might spend time relying on God's strength, recognizing that God will always give us a way through, and readying ourselves for the celebration of Easter, which is transcendent, when we do see the bright and shining Christ. So I say to you all, as we gather together this last Sunday, before the season of Lent finds us, we gather in the image of the Christ who is transfigured, shining bright and glorious. The Christ that the students and the people in Asbury, in Wilmore, Kentucky, are seeing. The Christ that is the glorious embodiment of perfection. And I say to you the same thing the Father in heaven did. This is the Son of God in whom the Father is well pleased. Listen to him as he invites you all to come down into the valley, where you will learn from our God who walks with us through our difficulty, who holds us up when we cannot stand, who gives us strength when we cannot find it in ourselves, who comforts us when we mourn, and who forgives us when we make mistakes. Embrace the period of Lent for what it is. Challenge to train us, not to train us in how strong we are, but to train us in how gracious God is. Amen.